Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the TBH Sports Podcast. We have got a loaded show for you today. Plenty of action going on. Wildcard weekend wrapping up. The divisional round is on its way in. We are down to the final eight teams in the NFL. And, of course, yesterday, at least at the time of this recording, the national championship game in college football. But for now, let's go ahead and introduce our two guests. It is the Sports Illustrated A-Team back in action. My first guest, of course, the Sports Illustrated writer for the Kansas City Chiefs and a host on Roughing the Kicker. It's Jordan Foote. Jordan, welcome back into the show.
Tyler, thanks for having me on, bud.
Absolutely. Thanks for sticking with me through my first three failed intros. And, of course, our second guest, a Sports Illustrated writer for the Arizona Cardinals. Plenty of action going on the writing side as well with the Arizona State Sun Devils. It's Alex Weiner. Alex, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, guys, well, we got plenty to talk about today, so let's go ahead and get right into it. Six games over the course of the weekend, most of them pretty good. This was a really solid wildcard weekend, all things considered, and let's start with the first game that happened. The Bills get a 27-24 win over the Colts in what turned into a nail-biter. Jordan, a game featuring two really good AFC teams. I know as a Chiefs fan, you probably had a close eye on this one. Go ahead and just start us off with a breakdown of what you saw in this game out of these two teams.
Yeah, in this one, I mean, heading into the game, I thought that if Phillip Rivers threw the ball more than 40 times, it was going to bode pretty poorly for the Colts. He threw the ball 46 times. Phillip Rivers actually played a pretty solid game. Like, until the end, I think that it was a poetic end to, well, I guess possible end to his career, that he couldn't get the ball all the way to the end zone on the Hail Mary attempts. But hats off to the Colts. They played a really tough game. And that's what you expect out of them. They're a team that's built well in the trenches. They play sound football. And on the other end, Buffalo barely got it done. I mean, I really was starting to sweat watching that game towards the end of it. And I don't feel as confident in the Bills being a team that could give the Chiefs a run for their money. I think that's still true. But in terms of overtaking them in a possible AFC championship game, I just don't feel as confident. And that's if they can even get past the Baltimore Ravens team that's pretty scrappy.
Yeah, we'll have plenty to talk about that Bills-Ravens game coming up later on. But for right now, Alex, I wanted to get your take on this. I know you had a even closer eye on this game, knowing that you would possibly be facing off against this Buffalo team. Look, I thought this game was probably over when it got to be 24-10. It really did feel like the kind of game that I think many people were expecting, a game that the Bills were really going to be dominant in. But, you know, as Jordan said, I think that if there's one guy that deserves his respect coming out of this game, it's Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers led two touchdown drives late in that game. He does end up coming up on the short end of the stick, but a heck of a game for him, a heck of a game for the Colts defense as well. Keep in mind that while Phillip Rivers is making those drives, the defense also has to keep points off the board to stay in this one. So what were kind of a few key things that you saw out of the Bills late in this game that are kind of in the back of your mind as you start to think forward to the Ravens matchup against Buffalo?
Sure. I guess I'll start with first a quick thing. I'm really happy the Colts made the playoffs because they gave us this game, and it just felt like this was a playoff team throughout the season, and there was some, you know, there was a real chance that they wouldn't have made it, and, you know, they get in seventh seed, and they give this Buffalo team a really good run. As far as the Bills in the fourth quarter there, it's a little concerning to me that they didn't, you know, step on the throats when they had the opportunity to. But throughout the game, there really wasn't a huge segment of it which they outplayed Indianapolis. The Colts outplayed them in the first half. They went into halftime. The Bills were up 14-10. But, I mean, the Colts were right there, I believe, on the four-yard line late in the first half. And they had an opportunity to go up even more. And they don't get it. They go for it on fourth down. They still don't get it. The Bills come back, and they have a just awesome drive down the field. We got some really excellent catches along the sideline, and that ended up, like, you know, really changing what the outlook of the game was like, because I felt like the Colts severely outplayed them in the first half. And, you know, you go into the second half, the Bills are up, they kind of take commanding lead, and then the fourth quarter, the Colts come storming back and nearly, you know, upset the Bills. They just come up a little bit short. So Buffalo, I thought, really underperformed in this game. The Colts had a really awesome game plan for them. They ran the ball pretty well. I know that Jonathan Taylor wasn't amazing in this game, but as a team, they ran the ball really well. And against Buffalo, they kind of stifled the Buffalo running game quite a bit. So And losing Zach Moss obviously hurts. So some concerning stuff for Buffalo. I think they did enough, but I thought got outplayed for most of the game.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And I actually am of the belief that this is a good thing for Buffalo. I think if you look back to Buffalo's last six games, they won all of them by double digits, several of them in blowout fashion. It's easy to kind of get complacent, even in a playoff game when you're winning games like that. And I think that this was kind of a wake-up call for them of, oh yeah, no, we're in the playoffs, and every team that's here for the most part is going to be able to compete with us. Now, I don't think we're going to see that same level of lackadaisical defense to a degree that we saw against the Colts this week against Baltimore, but yeah, I think this could end up being a good lesson for the Bills to learn early on, and it's a good thing that they learned it while they were up by 14 points and not on the other side of that. Any closing comments, Jordan, really quickly on this game before we move on to Rams Seahawks?
No, I agree with you that I think it very well could be a wake-up call for the Bills, and people kind of indict the Chiefs because they had so many one-score games or within 6 points or whatever it was to close out the year. Man, it's just as important to win the ugly games as it is to win the blowouts, and I think that in the playoffs there's not a ton of consistency from week to week. You kind of have to be built to win every type of game. So if Buffalo can win those types of games, it does bode well for them moving forward.
Sure. So let's go ahead and move on to game number two of our slate. The Rams get a 30-20 victory over the Seattle Seahawks. I felt pretty good about, you know, I predicted Seattle to put up 20 points. I did not expect that the Rams, either with John Wolford or with an injured Jared Goff, would be able to put 30 up on that Seattle defense, despite the fact that they've looked pretty suspect this year. Alex, you've been covering these teams throughout the course of the year. It's part of the reason we gave you this game to preview. It's part of the reason I want to give you this game to kind of wrap up a little bit. Seattle felt like a very sus team coming into the playoffs just because of how, you know, their passing defense had been horrendous. Russell Wilson at times had struggled to keep the football in his team's possession. Did you just kind of see more of the same out of the Seahawks, or was there a different level of off in this game for them?
Russell Wilson had his worst performance. I don't know if I want to totally say in his career, but it's definitely close to it if it's not the worst performance of his career. And I said last week that I adored this Rams defense. I love basically everything they do on it. They have the stars, but also just as a cohesive unit, they're excellent. They're great at setting the edge. Their coverage is also always fantastic. But Wilson, even when he wasn't pressured, his output was really awful. And I've been reading multiple articles that they kind of highlight, okay, Russell Wilson was really bad under pressure in this game. But when he wasn't under pressure, he was almost equally, if not worse. And he was like missing reads, and it was just a really bizarre off performance from him. And he was a rock star to start the season. They were 5-0, and he got like all that MVP buzz and like the let Russ cook, all that kind of stuff. And since then, he has not been the same player. And it sort of all culminated into this performance: 11 for 27. 174 yards and a pick six. I mean, you talked about the Rams, you know, you didn't see the Rams getting 30 points. Well, that wasn't really all on their offense. Their defense was spectacular in this game. And they, you know, Russell Wilson, I don't really know what to say about it other than this was really bizarre and this was really a terrible performance.
Yeah, I think especially when you look at the fact that, again, they were going to be playing against either an injured quarterback or a quarterback that did not have a lot of NFL experience. Jordan, we've talked a little bit about Russell Wilson's performance, and feel free to expand upon that if you want. But I think the one thing that this reaffirmed, if nothing else, is that this Rams defense is still one of, if not the best, in the National Football League this year.
Yeah, no, I think we've bashed on Russell Wilson enough, and rightfully so. He did not play a good game, but I think this game says a lot more about the Rams, and that I think we can all agree they probably have the best defense left in this bracket. They had a Super Bowl caliber defense that we gushed about on the last show, and if Cam Akers is running the ball for over 100 yards and they're picking up first downs and they can kind of play that boring style of football, I'm with Alex. I love their defense. I think they have a ton of playmakers on that side. We're going to touch on the game they have coming up this weekend against Green Bay. I love the Rams. I think they're just probably one of the lower ceilings out of this group left, but also one of the highest floors because you know what you're going to get. And if you can hold Seattle to 20 points and have Wilson play such a bad game like that, you can do quite a bit of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we will talk plenty about this Rams game coming up. Of course, only four games left on the slate for the divisional weekend. But let's keep it rolling here with some wild card action. The last game of Saturday's slate, Buccaneers and Washington football team, a 31-23 win for Tom Brady and company. And look, at the end of the day, this game got kind of intriguing late. It always felt like Tampa was in control. There was never really a time when you feel like, if you're a Tampa Bay fan, oh, are we really going to lose to Washington in this game? Taylor Heinicke played a hell of a game. I want to commend him on every level possible. He stepped up in a spot where Alex Smith was out, and late in the game, he led a couple of very impressive drives, including that toe-tap touchdown in the corner late to give Washington a little bit of life. But I think if anything, this game just kind of proved to us that Washington didn't deserve to be in the playoffs to begin with. There are several teams that made the postseason that had one glaring issue, and I think that almost all, if not all, of those teams have now been eliminated. For Washington, the question was always going to be at the quarterback position. It was going to be a question of whether or not they could put points up on offense, and at the end of the day here, they were not able to do that. The interesting thing here, the Bucs scored all three of their scored three touchdowns all game. A lot of field goals kicked in this one. Again, their offensive output, maybe not what you would want it to be if you're a Bucs fan. The final score, maybe not what you'd want it to be if you're a Bucs fan. But Alex, let me ask you this. If you are watching this game from the Tampa Bay perspective, are you satisfied with what you saw in this game against Washington, or are you concerned heading into a third game against the Saints?
I feel fairly satisfied. I mean, they left a lot of points out there. Just they gained a lot of yards. They were over 500 yards for the game. Brady was mostly pretty good in this game. 381 yards for him, couple touchdowns. The Washington football team was able to get a little bit of pressure on him, but when he wasn't pressured, he was really good in this game. They lost Ronald Jones early, and but still, I feel like if you play this game, you know, 10 times, this is one of the lower scoring outputs. They just ended a lot of drives early, and you know, they finish up a couple of more of those drives, then who knows. We're not talking about the heroics of Taylor Heinicke as much as, you know, how he had like a nice game and they weren't really in it though. For Tampa Bay, you also are going to get back a couple of guys next week, Devin White being most prominent. So I feel still pretty solid about the end of the season. They played really well these last few weeks of the year. They get it done on the road in a playoff game. I know it was the Washington football team, but I think ultimately that this is, you know, another decent step for this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, especially in really finding that offensive coherency. Mike Evans, weren't sure he's going to play, ends up having a huge game. Antonio Brown makes a bit of an impact. So I think this is ultimately a positive for Tampa Bay.
Sure. Jordan, one of the biggest questions about this Tampa Bay team throughout the entire course of the season, it's how would Brady gel in a different system under a different coach with Bruce Arians and all of these new weapons that he had? And later on in the season, we really did start to see him kind of find his rhythm a little bit. You know, you've watched him for the last couple of weeks. You watched him in this game against Washington. Do you feel like Tampa Bay's offense is finally operating at its complete potential, or do you still feel like there is more ground to be gained given the pieces that they have? Because that's kind of the train I'm on when you look at the amount of touchdowns that they've left off the board in some of these games recently.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and that's simultaneously a scary thing because if Tampa Bay is operating at peak capacity, they can be the best team in the NFL and win the Super Bowl, but also all season, we've kind of been waiting on that team to show up, and it's not the same thing where it's a Chiefs situation where we know what the Chiefs are capable of at their best. We've seen that happen. Tampa Bay's in year one of this thing, and it's remarkable what Brady has done to have a really good season and bounce back at the age of 43, but we don't know when this offense or if this offense is going to become that well-oiled machine, and they run the ball okay. I guess Leonard Fournette did a pretty good job against Washington running the ball, but Taylor Heinicke, he balled out. The game was closer than I would have liked. Tampa definitely left quite a few opportunities on the field, and you can't do that against the Saints. We're going to touch on that matchup as well here in a moment, but I'm kind of satisfied with it. Like, I think it should have been it's one of those kind of games where the final score doesn't tell the entire story. Like, you knew that Tampa was going to end up winning it, even though Heinicke was being heroic, but I still feel like I'm wanting something more out of this Bucs team.
Sure, I think that's completely fair. And again, I'm not saying that anybody in Tampa should be hitting the panic button, but it is just kind of interesting. We've seen Washington, or not Washington, we've seen Tampa at times this year really just not playing up to the potential that they have when you look at them on paper. Moving on to Sunday's slate of games, and let's get right into it with Ravens-Titans, a 20-13 victory. Lamar Jackson, Alex, finally gets a win in the playoffs. Some celebration, some antics going on at midfield as well on that Tennessee Titans logo. You know, for you, for that fan base, for Lamar, this has just got to be a feel-good win all around. And again, to do it in close fashion, I think almost makes it feel better given some of the adversity that this team has faced in the past.
Right. First of all, he finally wins the playoff game. It was 0-2 when he's not even, he's, 24, 25?
Oh, he'll be fine. But it's a narrative nonetheless.
I get it. They were the top seed last year, and they got upset. I don't remember what start that was for him in his rookie year. It was the seventh start of his career, eighth start of his career, something like that. So, I don't know. It is good to see him get that. I was reading a story in The Athletic where, you know, Lamar has this face with the media that it's not bothering me that I had I'm 0-2 in the playoffs, but behind the scenes he was I need to get this win, and you know, vocally as a leader, apparently he stepped up big time this week, and that's a really great sign to see for Ravens fans that he got them to, you know, not only get the win but also keep them engaged in a comeback win, because they were down 10-0, and the thing with the Ravens is that they can't come back, and a lot of times we've seen that they can't. They've have a couple of comebacks under Lamar Jackson, but for the most part, if you go up on them, especially if you're a good running team like the Titans are, you can get them. You can basically put them away. But that wasn't the case this time. The Ravens didn't panic. They kept their game plan. They ran the ball incredibly well. Lamar was a spark plug because they really couldn't contain him. And defensively, the Ravens loaded up the box a lot. They stacked 8 defenders up front on a lot of Derrick Henry's runs, and he couldn't get anything. 40 rushing yards for a guy who just reached 2,000 on the season is an incredible accomplishment for the Ravens. And I said last week, Calais Campbell would be a huge X factor, and he was. He and Derek Wolfe were both excellent up front, and, you know, kind of pushing that line back. So, huge win for the Ravens and for Lamar Jackson himself. But, you know, this team had Super Bowl aspirations last year, they had Super Bowl aspirations this year. And they got to keep up that intensity to go up to Buffalo, who is a team I think they match up decently well against, especially after seeing what the Colts did to Buffalo. So, but a good start for them for sure in this new era.
Absolutely. Jordan, I know you don't get too much into narratives. I know you prefer to see what you see with your eyes and what you see, you know, to some degree in the stat sheet. But, you know, we talk a little bit about this Lamar Jackson narrative and the Ravens not being able to come from behind narrative. You know, even though it was, as Alex mentioned, and I think it's a great point, Alex, that, you know, it was 2 games. Lamar's young. This team is figuring it out. They're fine. And I completely agree with you there. But I do still think there is something to be said for getting that first win, for kind of defeating the narrative and just not having to think about that from now on. Like, it's not even in the back of your mind if you're on this Ravens team from here on out through the rest of this playoff run and next year. This just isn't something you really have to think about anymore.
It's huge, man. I mean, to get that proverbial monkey off of Lamar Jackson's back that he can't win a playoff game. I mean, the only thing that is going to that people really want to see from him, because a 10-point comeback is a 10-point comeback, but I guess people are never going to be satisfied with what Lamar does. If he was down 24 against the Bills and came back, then I think finally people would stop with all the criticism, but we're definitely taking steps in the right direction, and that guy, he's still growing. That's the thing. He's such a young quarterback, and we'll talk about how all 4 quarterbacks left in the AFC picture are really young. All these guys are just getting started, and Lamar is a lethal running threat. He's becoming a lethal passing threat. He kind of had a lull, the entire team did, in the middle of the season, but they rounded into form. They got hot at the right time, and Tennessee, I mean, if Derrick Henry isn't operating at even 70% of what he can do, that team isn't going to go very far. I mean, if your best players are running back and you're relying on that running game to do well, and it's not working, then you're kind of screwed. And I think that Baltimore, to a degree, is kind of in the same boat, but it's not just one guy. Like, if Lamar's not running, then they have Gus Edwards or Dobbins, or if those two aren't operating, Lamar will have 136 yards like he did against Tennessee. It was a very promising start for Baltimore, and they're going to face, I think, what's going to be the most fun game of the weekend against the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, most definitely. We will get into that here in just a moment. Alex, I wanted to ask you one more thing really quickly. I forgot to bring this up earlier. I feel like more so than any other team in the league, I think when it comes to the Ravens, you know what they're going to try to do. They run the football more than any other team in the league. They pass the football less than any other team in the league, at least if you're looking at the yardage outputs that they get in games. They are daring you to stop Lamar Jackson and the rest of this running game. And I think we saw it too. I mean, in that big rushing touchdown that Lamar Jackson had, there were three guys that if that's any other quarterback in the league, except for maybe Kyler Murray, he gets tackled. It's a big gain. You go back to the line of scrimmage and you do your thing. Lamar just takes off and he hits that extra gear. And again, I mean, for a Ravens fan, how good is it to see, you know, again, they know the Titans knew what they needed to do to stop you. They just couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, part of that's also the Titans don't really have the personnel to do that with. You need some pretty solid speed on the edge to try to set that. Middle linebackers have some decent speed, too. And the Titans all year defensively have been pretty slow. And they really just couldn't catch up to him when he was making those moves. But, yeah, he, over these last, you know, few weeks, I know there was a bit of a down time during the season, and then they, you know, the COVID situation happens and he comes back. It takes a little bit to get back, and then, you know, that Browns game, and then since then, and then we got to see it on full display against the Titans. He can be unstoppable in certain respects, and so it's really a big challenge on how to game plan for him, because like Jordan said, they could also go to other directions. They run a lot of RPOs. They run a lot of RPOs, and you know, if you don't know how to contain those particularly well, they can do a lot of different stuff. And every play can have a lot of different looks to it depending on what Lamar reads. And I think his reading is getting a lot better. And I think he's making a lot of really good decisions. A couple of, you know, mess-ups last week. There was a pitch that he had that he was getting tackled and, like, pitched it back to Dobbins and lost, like, 5 yards, and I wasn't quite sure what he was doing. So he'll have some boneheaded stuff like that in every game. But I think ultimately, him just kind of getting smarter back there and knowing what to do. And once he makes a decision, he has some space, he's impossible to get down. So, yeah, those are all really great signs. But, you know, now they're going to face the Buffalo defense. It isn't great against the run, but they're certainly better than Tennessee. So it's sort of another step on the ladder of challenges for the postseason.
Certainly. Two more games to recap, and this one will not take too much time. Saints get a 31-16 win over the Bears. Before we talk about this game, though, there is something that absolutely 1,000% needs to be addressed. The Nickelodeon broadcast of this game was awesome. It was horrifying at times. It was head-scratching at times, but it was awesome. The slime cannons in the end zone, the bizarre color commentary that they had, the SpongeBob countdown. Jordan, did you get a chance to see any of this at all? It was weird.
Yeah, no, I did, and I kind of had a low tolerance for it. It was wonderful, but after a certain point, I switched back to the regular broadcast. I think that if I was younger, then it would be like heaven for me, and I would be watching it 24/7. And obviously, like, the SpongeBob ties were fantastic and all that stuff, but the commentary was good. But every time I wanted, like, the non-watered-down version of the game, I'd switch back to the normal one. But I think that it worked really seamlessly between the two broadcasts. And if the NFL's going to make money off of it, they're going to keep doing it. So I think that stuff like that, that won't be the last time we see it.
Well, and to be fair, I wasn't watching any of the Nick broadcast. I was just seeing the cool things happening on Twitter. I wasn't actually watching that.
Oh, okay.
No. I was not tuned into the Nickelodeon broadcast for the Saints playoff game. That was not a thing that was going to happen.
That makes perfect sense, but I did watch the Nickelodeon broadcast for basically the entirety of.
Really? Okay. So what was your take on that? Really quickly here, before we get into the game itself, just give me a brief piece of your thoughts on the Nick broadcast here.
I thought it helped make the game tolerable because a 21-9 football game where you kind of know what happened at the beginning of the game and it's very obvious what the outcome is going to be, and it was like easily the least interesting game of the weekend, and it was always going to be. So I thought that it was kind of fun, you know, having, you know, Alvin Kamara getting, you know, compared to Alvin and the Chipmunks and stuff. it was a lot of nostalgia too, but it was kind of fun how loose they were with it. Nate Burleson was phenomenal, just explaining things and kind of knowing what he was doing. And then the slime was awesome. I just wish we got more of it, but this game didn't warrant that. So I thought it was pretty fun. I had to mute some of the halftime stuff with the new SpongeBob, which I totally did. It was like, wow, I can't believe what they're doing with this. But I have to give a major shout out to those in animation who put all the effects on the highlights and had the like block version of the highlights at halftime. Like, that's really impressive to get that done that quickly. So big shout. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, I didn't want to waste too much time, but just kind of a cool thing. I did joke around that if you wanted to get kids interested in football, this probably wasn't the game out of the weekend to do it. But of course, the Saints get a 21-9 victory. Before we move on from that really quickly, Mitchell Trubisky wins the first ever MVP award. Slap that in his trophy cabinet. I felt very bad for Trubisky having to endure that. So the Saints get the win. Look, here's the thing. I'm going to give my thoughts on this game really quickly, then we'll move on. If the Saints come out and play like this against Tampa Bay, they're going to lose by 30, maybe by 40. They looked bad on offense. The defense kept them in this game the entire way. The offense was head-scratchingly bad in this game. Alvin Kamara was barely involved. Michael Thomas did open up the game, but there were a lot of times where we would have somebody open and just drop passes completely killed Saints drives throughout. And then, of course, keep in mind the Bears have a drop from Javon Wims that late in that first half. They should have been up going into the halftime, but the defense played so well with the exception of that. There are a lot of injuries on this Bears defense, and I think that also can't go understated. If you're a Saints fan, especially, you know, myself, this does not feel comfortable at all. But again, the defense holds the Bears to 7 first downs prior to that final drive, and they'll face an offensive line that they've eaten alive twice next week. So it'll be interesting to see what happens coming out of this. Jordan, did you have any other thoughts here on this Saints-Bears game? Again, I realize the least interesting game out of them all, pretty self-explanatory, but anything else that you saw that you wanted to kind of highlight here before we move on?
Really just, I hope that this game highlighted how Mitch Trubisky should not be getting a contract extension with the Chicago Bears, or shouldn't re-up for any amount of years. I don't think that running it back for another year is the answer. I don't think a 1-1 is the answer. Re-upping for 2 years, I don't think that 3 years is the answer, or anything longer than that. He's not a good quarterback. He is a serviceable quarterback, and teams with an 85 Bears level defense and the best running game in the NFL maybe can win games like that, kind of like a Cleveland Browns type thing. If you put him there and they had like a steroided up defense and everyone was operating the capacity, they could win like 10 games and be okay. But I think that they're in a tough spot as an organization where they're not bad enough to tank, I don't think, and get a good draft pick, but they're also not good enough to do any damage come playoff time. So it'll be really interesting to see what Trubisky does in the future, but also how the Bears go from here.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I've said the same thing. I feel like Trubisky is almost going to guarantee that you're going to be borderline in or out of the playoffs, but you're not going to win anything, and you're not going to get a good enough draft pick to kind of build around him. He may be the MVP, but he is not the answer for Chicago. Alex, any other thoughts you had on this game really quickly before we move on to what I think we can all agree was the most shocking game of the weekend?
No, I'm more excited to talk about Cleveland versus Pittsburgh, to be quite honest.
All right, well,
starting for the Saints, the Bears played exactly how I imagined they would.
All right, the Bears were who we thought they were. You heard it here from Alex Weiner. Let's talk about the last game of the day, Browns and Steelers. We're going to cut right now to an interview that I had very briefly with my roommate who is from Cleveland. Very short. We'll get to that, and we'll be right back after this. Taking a break from the normal podcast and having a conversation here with my roommate, Jake Ramada, who is a Cleveland native, a lifelong Browns fan. And Jake, last night, an opportunity to see something that you would never experience before, not only a Cleveland Browns playoff game, but a playoff win. A day removed from that, how you feeling?
It's funny, too, because I know we were chatting last night before the game, and I didn't even know how like the playoff bracket worked in the NFL. That's how crazy it was. So I don't even know. I still have no idea how to react, what to think. It's just one of those things that's so surreal, because just when you think about it, how bad the Browns have been over the years, and now this has happened. It's just weird. It's crazy to think.
Yeah, it was funny. Of course, Matthias Weilmann, who's been on the show before, we were talking with you, and you were like, yeah, how does the reseeding work? Like, you've never had to focus on this before because the Browns have never been in the postseason. And then there was also this level of skepticism throughout the entire game of, are we going to screw this up? Or maybe more to the point, when are we going to screw this up? Even at 28-0, I remember you told me, you said, I've been conditioned for years to just not expect anything good from this team.
Well, even earlier in the season, you think about the Dallas Cowboys game, where the Browns are up so much, and the next season, you know, the Cowboys come parading back and it's a ball game again. So, and even Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth last night were saying, well, yeah, Browns fans still aren't easy. And you're right. I was there. There's still that level of skepticism where, like, something's going to go wrong. Baker's going to throw a pick. We're going to fumble here. I mean, we were up 28-0 at the end of the first quarter when Pittsburgh is fully capable of scoring 28 points in a quarter, too. So, my skepticism level is still high, regardless of the score.
So, at what point did that start to kind of erode? Because, obviously, as the game goes on, you know, the lower the number on that clock, the better chance you have of winning. But at what point did it sink in of, wow, we're really going to win a playoff game?
I think probably like 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
Okay.
That's probably when I started kind of realizing what was going to happen. That's very late in the game, right? I mean, but those are the Browns. The Browns could have done Browns things still. So that, I think that's when I finally realized that it was actually going to happen.
It certainly could. We also talked a little bit about, you know, of all the teams in the NFL, if you mm-hmm. could pick any of the other 31 teams to do this to in this fashion, it probably would have been the Pittsburgh Steelers. So not only do you get the win, but you get the win over a team that has caused you so much pain in the past. How did it feel to finally dish some of that out instead of constantly being on the receiving end with Pittsburgh?
Well, it's amazing because, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is the winningest quarterback in Cleveland Brown Stadium. You know what I mean? So, and that kind of sucks to have to swallow and accept that. But it just feels really good doing it to the Steelers because they've handed us some butt kickings, man. It's been so bad. But to win like we did and the way that we did it was just amazing. I guess like Baltimore would have been fun, but it's better to stick it to your rival because I mean Baltimore's the old Browns essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But to do it to Pittsburgh is amazing, and I have fans. Well, I have friends who are Pittsburgh Steelers fans too, and even they're like, you know what, we're happy for you. You know, so it's really cool.
So you get past Pittsburgh, you have to, you know, take in the moment, but then you look at what's going to happen on Sunday. You will turn around and play Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. So let me ask you this. You've seen this team every single week. You've watched 17 Browns games now. You've seen their first playoff win. What is your feeling as a Browns fan going into this matchup where now you're going to have to go into Arrowhead and try to take on one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in NFL history?
Well, it's not like Chase Claypool. I don't think we're going to get clapped, but I think we're going to put up a hard fight. I mean, you know, Patrick Mahomes is capable of crazy, ridiculous things. Like, the guy is literally a walking football god in my book. I just don't know and understand how he's able to do it a lot of the time. So, he's going to give us a lot of fits, man. I really don't know. I think it's going to be at least a two-score game. I think Kansas City probably is going to win. But just to see the Browns in this spotlight is ridiculous. Because 3 years ago, you would never think that they were even going to be capable of even getting close to the playoffs. So, I'm just thrilled with the outcome from last night. Kansas City is going to be a little tough, and I think a lot of Clevelanders know that.
Yeah, I think most Browns fans, probably yourself included, would agree. This is already a victory season. Like, this season has already exceeded your expectations. But let me ask you: you've gotten a little bit of a taste now for what playoff victory feels like. Going into next year, what's it going to take to satisfy you and maybe the rest of Cleveland here for this Browns team? Even if you lose to Kansas City next week, I mean, what is it going to take for you guys to be happy next season?
Well, I think you have to win the division. You're fully capable of doing that. I mean, I don't think this year they were fully capable of winning it. but I think now that we're seeing Pittsburgh on a decline, I think you have to win the division, get a home game next year. That would be amazing. Playoff football in Cleveland.
Ooh.
I kind of wish I was downtown, but then again, like the whole, COVID throws a wrench into that. But playoff football in Cleveland, I would love to see that. But I think, again, you have to get to the same spot you're in, because now expectations are going to be higher. And I know everyone's like, oh, like Super Bowl. I don't know. I really don't know yet, because Kansas City's just so good. I mean, you still have a lot of very talented football teams out there. So I think you have to get back to the spot you're in now and just focus on getting better, I think, each and every week next week or next year. But we have Sunday to go still. So yes. We'll see. We will see.
Absolutely. Well, before we let you go, let's get a score prediction for you. Kansas City and Cleveland meeting on Sunday. What is your prediction for a score in this one?
So I said 2-score game at least. I'm going, I'm going to go, Kansas City's at least going to score, I think, at least 30. So, gosh, this is tough. 35-21.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, you heard it here first. You heard it from a Cleveland native, and we'll get back to the show after this. And we are back here. So let's talk about this game a little bit more in detail. Talk about the actual game itself. So, Jordan, I know this is a game that we all had highlighted. All three of us took the Browns in this game. I don't think any of us expected what we got, though. We were expecting kind of a sloppy, low-scoring game that the Browns might be able to come and make a late drive with Baker in this game and win it. No, this was a shellacking by Cleveland.
Yeah, and I expected the Browns scored 48 points. I expected like a combined 48 points for the entire game. It was ridiculous, up 28 zip after one quarter, and I don't want to give too much credit to the Browns. Obviously, they did end up winning the game, but A, it was kind of a fluky 28-0. It was like a perfect storm of things happening. Pittsburgh shooting themselves in the foot. And then Pittsburgh had a couple moments in that second half where they were threatening to make that game close. I mean, it was down to like 11 or 12 a couple times, and it was really never in jeopardy per se, but Cleveland just didn't put their foot on the gas. They didn't score at all in the third quarter, and they're going to have to shore some of that stuff up. But credit where credit's due. The running game wasn't as dynamic and effective as I thought it was going to be. They did end up getting two touchdowns, but Baker Mayfield played a good game. The Browns answered in that fourth quarter when they needed to without Kevin Stefanski. So hats off to them. And then on the other side, Big Ben just... he's getting paid a lot of money if he comes back next year, but I hope for his sake that he decides to hang it up, because he just doesn't look like the same quarterback he's been for the past 15-plus.
Yeah, I think for his sake, and I think also for Pittsburgh's sake, I think they really do need to start focusing on moving on from Big Ben. I think it's very apparent. He is no longer of the caliber quarterback you need to be to lead a team in the playoffs, and I think that was on full display tonight. Alex, the first play of this game, we knew something was off. We knew something weird was going to happen. At what point did you kind of make a little mental note of, holy crap, the Browns are really going to win a playoff game?
Yeah, I mean, that thought occurred to me when they scored their third touchdown. And it was just like, okay, it's 21-0 now. And it's a long game, and I think it happened, but they would really need to screw this up to lose it. And then they go up 28-0. I was like, okay, the Browns are winning this game. And then I kind of had to dial that back a little bit, because they got extremely conservative basically for the rest of the game until they finally were able to put together another touchdown drive in the fourth quarter. But they kind of put it on themselves to make it more interesting, because they really didn't have that, oh, we're going to put our foot on their throat, we're going to run up the score, we're going to do that. They were like, okay, we're up by multiple scores. Let's make sure we keep it this way. That sort of playing not to lose versus playing to win. We had a couple, pretty quick three and outs in that third quarter. The Steelers were able to take advantage and make it somewhat competitive in the game. But they held on. I thought that they had it in the bag after they were up 28-0. And then we found out it was like a slight pulse in that third quarter, and then it went away. So the Browns took care of business, but they could have wrapped it up a lot sooner.
Yeah, my roommates and I kept wondering why they weren't just handing the ball off to Nick Chubb every single time. There were several, you mentioned those quick three and outs. A lot of them had just a lot of incompletions as well. And now you're looking at, you've taken like 12 seconds off the clock Atlanta Falcons style, and you're handing the ball back to the offense. It was very, very bizarre to see some of the play calling. And maybe some of that had to do with the fact that Stefanski wasn't there to, to run the team the way he would have wanted to. Jordan, I wanted to ask you one more thing really quickly on this game before we move into the games that are coming up here for this week. Uncle Colin, Not a big Browns guy. He predicted a blowout win for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He also said this week something I wanted to ask you about specifically. He said that he thinks as of right now, Josh Allen looks like the more composed and what were his exact words? The more composed and potentially the better quarterback right now of the two between him and Mahomes, which I thought was very interesting. Is Uncle Colin losing it? Is he doing all right?
No. I've always maintained this point about Uncle Colin, and it's he bats about 300 for his takes. I'd say 3 out of every 10 are good. He misses about 7 times, which I don't really know what that – it's kind of one of those things where you don't know what the going rate would be for national sports media guys. I kind of feel for them because they have to fill a lot of space. They kind of need those hot takes, but still, there are guys that have above 500 batting averages. But when he hits – those three are really, really good. Like, he can put out a 5-minute segment where he has the numbers, he has everything to back it up, he has the narrative, he has the weird analogy mixed in that works. I mean, it's a love-hate thing, but mostly love, because I'm a big Uncle Colin guy. But man, it is what it is with him and Baker Mayfield. I think that now it's kind of like a friendly banter, and he's starting to give the guys props. Now with the Allen and Mahomes thing, I get it, because Mahomes didn't play well for the final few games of the season, so technically right now, Allen's playing like a better quarterback, but I think even Uncle Colin would be fooling himself if they said, oh, who would you rather have playing quarterback in the playoffs this weekend? If he said Josh Allen, I'm pretty sure he'd be lying to himself.
Yeah, no, all he said was the better currently and more confident quarterback, which, we'll get into the Kansas City here in a minute, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. I thought that was kind of amusing, and I thought it was funny seeing Baker Mayfield flip his hat around backwards during that post-game interview, and then, of course, Colin retweeted it. I think it's all in good fun. It's good to see those two kind of going back and forth and having some fun. So yeah. Let's take a look at the divisional round here, boys. We've got 8 teams left in the playoffs. It'll get started at 4:35 Eastern time on Saturday when the Rams visit the Packers. Lambeau Field, the Packers are favored by 7 in this game. And really quickly, before we get into these matchups, I wanted to point out 3 of these games are actually going to be between teams that have never seen each other in the regular season, which I think is going to be very, very interesting. When you look at, you know, what we're going to get. We're going to get some teams that haven't seen each other. And then, of course, you've got Bucs-Saints Part 3. But let's start here, Rams and Packers. This is going to be intriguing. You have a Rams team, we've talked about it, if they don't have the best defense in football certainly remaining, they have the second best defense remaining. They are going to have a banged up John Wolford and Jared Goff combination. We don't really know how healthy Aaron Donald is going to be, some torn cartilage on his ribs. I don't really know how confident I am in the Rams' ability to limit this Green Bay team, despite the fact that they have one of the best passing defenses in the league. But I think the one concern for me with the Packers is that they've really only played against 2 great defenses this year, and they lost in both of those games. They lost 38-10 against Tampa earlier this year, and they lost 34-31 against Indy towards the end of the season. So, Jordan, I'm going to come back to you really quickly on this matchup. I mean, we've seen what Aaron Rodgers can do time and time again throughout the years. He is playing at an MVP level this season. When you look at this Rams defense and the way that they've been able to silence great quarterbacks, and you look at what they did to Russell Wilson last week, is there any concern for you if you're the Packers right now, or do you feel like it's just going to kind of be business as usual, maybe with a slightly lower score?
No, I mean, there is a legit level of concern, and I believe in Aaron Rodgers and the Packers as much, if not more, than anybody out there, but the Rams are a good team, and we have seen Rodgers. Last year it was San Francisco that was a bad matchup. This year, Tampa Bay really shut him down. The Rams are a tough team. If Jalen Ramsey can not neutralize, but just slow down Devontae Adams a little bit and then take care of the ball offensively and put up points, I think this one's going to come down to how well the Rams offense plays. I think the defense is going to slow down Green Bay enough to where this game isn't a blowout. I think that not only is it a little disrespectful to the Rams, but I think that Green Bay is not guaranteed to show up and blow out teams like this. It's not in their recent track record. Last year in that NFC Championship game, they didn't play particularly well at all. The final score was really a lot closer than the game was. So there's a legit level of concern. I mean, I'm still going to roll with Green Bay in this one, but the Rams could definitely get in some trouble, I think, if they do things the right way.
They certainly have the pieces in play. Alex, let me ask you this. Last week on the show, all three of us took the Seahawks, and all three of us had a similar explanation. It was, well, okay, if Jared Goff's not going to play and they're going to put John Wolford on the field, or if they do end up putting Jared Goff in there and he's just not healthy, we don't trust the offense to put up enough points. And yeah, you mentioned it too. There was a pick six in that game. The defense came up and added some life on the scoreboard, but at what point do we have to start taking this defense, not seriously, because we've been taking them seriously all season long, but do we have to look at them as a defense on the level that can keep a bad offense or a mediocre offense in a game like this against the Packers?
They can absolutely do it. I mean, I think so. I mean, obviously you mentioned Aaron Donald going down, and that's going to be a major factor, but even when Aaron Donald wasn't in the game, they were really awesome against Seattle. And you know, Seattle, for all their faults offensively in the second half, that's a team with a lot of really awesome playmakers. And essentially, you know, they're a broken play that Russell Wilson, like, heaves it up to DK Metcalf away from, like, really, really shutting them down. Against the Packers, the Rams are 8-0 when they allow 19 points or fewer in a lot of these games. And the Packers are, I don't think, capable of scoring fewer than 20 points in a game. We just haven't seen it other than, I think, the Tampa Bay game. So maybe one other one, but it hasn't happened recently. I think the Packers are good enough and smart enough offensively, and LaFleur and Rodgers have really found something together, that they're good enough to get enough points against the Rams defense, despite the Rams defense being phenomenal. Side note, Davante Adams going up against Jalen Ramsey is going to be spectacular.
Yes, that is going to be a matchup to keep an eye on for sure. And I don't think I realized, like, I knew the Rams defense was really good. Then today I went and looked at some numbers. The Rams are first in the league in scoring defense. They're first in the league in passing defense. They're fourth in the league in rushing defense. There is not a single defensive category that they are not in the top five in, and they lead two of the most three important ones that you have. I really do think that they're going to have a chance in this game, but I am still concerned just with Green Bay's potent offense. And I think the biggest factor in this game for me is actually the health, because while you had the Rams getting dinged up and continuing to get injuries to some of their best players last week, Green Bay was sitting at home watching it all unfold from the comfort of their couch on a television screen. So, Jordan, let's go ahead and get... Go ahead, Alex.
Sorry about that. I think something else, too, is the fact that just at quarterback with the Rams, if it's Jared Goff on, you know, a bad thumb again, they're probably going to be pretty conservative, that which might limit what they're able to do offensively. And if they're not, he's always turnover prone. And they had 25 giveaways this year, I believe, 13 interceptions. And if you give a Packers offense like this more possessions, I mean, that's just going to be really difficult to overcome, too. So I think that could potentially, if the Rams give the ball away, they didn't last week. If they do this week, that's going to be probably close to impossible to overcome.
Yeah, I more or less agree. Before we let you go here, Alex, or not let you go, but before we move on, go ahead and give me a final score prediction in this one. Packers and Rams, what do you got here?
Yeah, I think that the Rams contain the Packers at least a little bit, so I'm going to go Packers get the win 24-16.
All right, 24-16. Jordan, your final thoughts on this matchup and a score prediction from you, sir.
I'm going to go 28-23. Not a really close game, but also enough to where it kind of puts some respect on the Rams' name as a team. I think, like Alex said, it comes down to turnovers. That's going to be a huge thing. If the Rams can take care of the ball, they're going to be in this one until the very end, but even one or two turnovers, and they're going to be looking at Aaron Rodgers going up and down the field, putting up easy points. So it depends on also where the field position of those turnovers is. Goff can kind of throw the ball to the other team no matter where they're at. So if Green Bay takes over deep in L.A. territory, that's going to spell doom for them. But I think they're going to keep it close and go 28-23 Packers.
All right, I'll wrap it up here. I agree. I think there is a very high floor on how few points it's possible for the Packers to score, but I also think there's a very low ceiling in terms of how many points the Rams will allow. I'm going to go with Packers win 27-17 in this one. All three of us sticking with the team that had the first round bye, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. After that, 8:15 Eastern time, Buffalo and Baltimore. It'll be the Ravens at the Bills. Buffalo favored in this one by 2.5. Again, no regular season meetings. Alex, I'll turn the mic over to you, sir. Go ahead and set this matchup up for us and give us a couple of the biggest key things that you're going to be keeping an eye on when these two square off in a loaded Bills Mafia crowd.
I love this game so much. I think that this is going to probably be the game of the weekend. These are the two hottest teams, I think, or at least in the AFC, based on how they ended their regular seasons and like stepped up to the plate in the postseason, because the Ravens have not lost since, I believe it was that game against Pittsburgh, where it was like the COVID game and they had, you know, Trace McSorley out there for a little while. RG3 started that game. And then the Bills haven't lost since the Hail Murray in Arizona. So two teams haven't lost in a while. The Bills have objectively had a much better season than the Ravens overall, but the Ravens' biggest strength offensively is the Bills' biggest weakness defensively. The Bills are, you know, for the most part, been pretty good at stopping the pass. They have some really excellent players in the secondary, like cornerback Tre'Davious White, and there have been ball hawks this year too. Interception-wise, they have 15 this year. But in yards per carry, they're allowing over 4.5 yards per carry, which is towards the bottom of the league, and this is a Ravens team that is really found a rhythm with mixing in to Dobbins, you know, power back with Gus Edwards, running those RPOs and letting Lamar Jackson get space, which we talked about earlier. When he's in space, he's incredibly hard to tackle, as you can just ask the Tennessee Titans. So I think this is a really awesome matchup for both sides. And then, you know, going up against, you know, Josh Allen, he's going to get some pressure this week, and he's going to face some of the better cornerbacks in the league this week in Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. So I think this is a really favorable matchup to the Ravens. I think the Bills are better, but I think this has all the makings of being the game of the weekend.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this will be the best game out of this entire weekend, and it's going to be close. I think one thing we do know, there are a lot of scenarios, but I feel like this is going to be close. Some people have brought up, you know, well, the Bills crowd, it's going to be crazy. How the Ravens respond? Look, I don't know how they managed to do it. I don't even know if it was legal. The number of fans in Tennessee this weekend was insane. That crowd was going nuts. The Ravens handled it just fine. I'm not worried about the crowd whatsoever. I'm focusing on the action on the field. And Jordan, let's talk about the action on the field. We heard a little bit about it from kind of the Ravens perspective, but you've been talking about this Bills team for the last couple of weeks. You know, we've seen them develop from a team of, wow, Josh Allen is really doing well, and this defense can kind of hold, to, wow, this might be the team that has the best chance to take down Kansas City in the AFC. What does Buffalo need to do to come away with a victory here against, again, a very, very tough Ravens team?
I think they have to accept that they're not going to be able to slow down the Ravens offense running the ball with Lamar Jackson, Dobbins, Edwards. They have guys who can just keep moving the chains, and Baltimore's going to have to keep Allen off the field. I think that Buffalo's biggest chance at winning this game hinges upon Josh Allen having a game where he plays out of his mind. And if you can force Lamar to throw, so the narrative goes, it makes it more difficult for Baltimore to win. And there's some data behind that too. But, I mean, what sucks is really whichever quarterback loses this game, no matter what fashion, unless it's a good old-fashioned shootout back and forth, they're going to be slandered. They're going to say, this quarterback's not legit, they're not in the same class as Mahomes yet, or blah, blah, blah. They're still so young, and it's great that they're getting this matchup going so early in their careers, and that there's some rivalries emerging potentially in the AFC, but I think the keys to the game for Baltimore are going to be moving the ball and at least keeping the ball away from the Bills, and Buffalo's going to have to take advantage of opportunities when they get them.
Yeah, I think you also brought up a point. I want to give you a chance to elaborate on this, but you brought something up earlier, and I double checked it just to see. You're absolutely right. The difference right now between the AFC and the NFC in terms of who is left for quarterbacks. Well, in the NFC, you have a 43-year-old Tom Brady, a 41-year-old Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, who I believe is 36 or 37, still in the prime of his career, but definitely not a young guy. And then Jared Goff. I mean, the defense is the reason that they're there. But in the AFC, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson, all drafted within the last several years. The future is really bright in the AFC, especially in terms of these quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I think the AFC is the superior conference, despite the fantastic games we're going to have in the NFC this week. But, I mean, there's so much young talent. Then you have guys like Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow, who they are not even in the playoffs yet, and that just shows just how much young talent there is in the AFC. Justin Herbert, Tua can turn out to be good. Derek Carr's a solid quarterback. So the AFC has a lot of good talent. I mentioned Carr. He's not in that youth movement, but he's still pretty good there. Just so many young guys who have either good or bad teams around them. And I think that a lot of it comes down to the supporting cast of the quarterback. We've seen throughout the history of, or the recent history of the league, that whatever team is around these quarterbacks will help determine how deep they go in the playoffs. And Buffalo has a good supporting cast around and enough playmakers on defense to stop passing attacks, but stopping Baltimore's run game, Lamar has playmakers, his offense, and some good defensive weapons. So this one's going to be the best game of the week, I think. And I really struggled. I went on my podcast, Roughing the Kicker. We had Matt Verderam of FanSided, and he went back and forth a couple times throughout the day with his pick. During his five-minute little segment, I went back and forth three times, and I've done the same thing now. So I really am struggling with who to pick. So I'm going to let you guys pick your pitch first.
Well, I was going to come to you for a pick, but I'll go ahead and give mine. Alex, the thing that stands out to me, I went back and forth on this as well. I tried to look at the stats, unhelpful. I tried to look at the tape, unhelpful. Tried to look at the records, also unhelpful. There's nothing that really sets these two teams apart. They play different styles. They're both very good. They're both very hot. At the end of the day, I sat down and I asked myself this question. If it comes down to it, and it's one team trying to lead a come-from-behind drive over the other, which team do I trust more? If it's Josh Allen and the Bills trying to lead a come-from-behind drive against that Ravens defense, I trust the Ravens. If it's Lamar Jackson trying to lead a come-from-behind drive against that Bills defense, I think I also trust the Ravens. And for that reason, I am taking this Baltimore team. I don't know if they'll need a come-from-behind victory, but I'm taking Baltimore 24-21 to advance to the AFC Championship game. Alex, let's go ahead and get your pick from the perspective of a Ravens fan.
Wow, wow, wow. Oh, my gosh. I did not expect people to be, like, really thinking about taking Baltimore in this, but here we are. Yeah, first of all, to go back to, like, very quick note, going to, like, Jordan's pick on, like, quarterbacks in the AFC and the young talent there. First off, get Deshaun Watson off the Texans. Second of all, the AFC is about to get Trevor Lawrence, too, so who knows what the Jags might look like in 4 years, too. So it's very exciting for the AFC young quarterbacks. Now, for this matchup, I was going back into the Bills' record or in their schedule and trying to find a team that's – there's no team that's really all that comparable to the Ravens, but the closest I could find was the Cardinals as far as how often they run RPOs, having a really mobile quarterback, being able to stretch the field a little bit, but really relying on that run game. And the Cardinals ran the ball really, really well against Buffalo. And I think that the Ravens have a really good opportunity to do the same. I think that the Buffalo offense is set up pretty well to, you know, play pretty decently against the Ravens. I think the fact that, you know, Allen can really sling it and they have a lot of guys that create some matchup issues. I think Diggs and Humphrey is going to be really fun, but I think Beasley gives them some issues. I don't know. I am actually leaning Baltimore, but in a 28-27 game. I think this is really, really close. And, you know, last year I picked against my team. Last week I picked for my team, and, you know, both those came true. So I guess I might as well run the wave and pick Baltimore 28-27.
Fair enough. Always risky to pick your team on a show, as we found in the past. Jordan, you've had some time to mull it over. Ravens at Bills. Who you got?
So while Alex was talking, I also thought 28-27, but I'm going to flip the teams that finished in that order. So I'm going to go Buffalo 28. Baltimore 27 in like a complete toss-up game. Like, I literally have no confidence in this pick. I think that both teams are going to come close to 30 points. It's going to be a fantastic game, but something tells me the Bills are just going to be able to, I don't know if it'll be a missed extra point or a game-winning field goal or what it's going to be, maybe a safety mixed in there to make the score weird, but I'm going to go 28-27 in favor of the Bills.
Really quickly, who do you think the Chiefs match up better with? Like, if you as a Chiefs fan just got to choose right now without a game who you'd be facing off against if you beat the Browns, who would you rather see in that next round?
I'd definitely rather see Baltimore. Not to say Baltimore is a bad team, but I think their recent history with the Chiefs has shown that they're not a great matchup for them. And there's a little bit of an element with the unknown with Buffalo. Granted, the Chiefs did play them earlier in the season and beat them pretty handily, but something about the Bills just scares me. The ceiling of that team is insane, and we've seen the ceiling of that team this season. Baltimore, we kind of see flashes of it, but I think the Bills are a lot more likely to hit it, even though both of those teams are hot at this time of the year.
All right, well, that's a perfect segue into the next game. Let's get into two games on Sunday at 3:05 Eastern time. It'll be the Cleveland Browns, who move on, playing at Arrowhead Stadium. They will be at Kansas City. The Chiefs favored in this game by 10, which I think is giving a lot of respect to the Browns when you look at some of the games that they were in earlier this season. I think Vegas is certainly giving them the respect that they're due. Jordan, I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic over to you, allow you to kind of set this matchup up. Give us kind of the things that you're going to be keeping an eye on here. And obviously, the Chiefs heavy favorites in this game. What are the Browns going to have to do if they're going to find a way to do the completely improbable here?
I think that it really comes down to what these teams need to be able to accomplish in order to win. Like, when you're looking at games or whatever's going on. For the Chiefs, like, the key to them winning pretty much any football game is to do what they're supposed to do and not turn the ball over on offense. Because you know they're probably going to get 30 points. You know the defense is going to make timely stops. You just have to hope that it's a well-oiled machine. Now, on Cleveland, you have to hope they're a well-oiled machine. You have to get pressure on Mahomes, which Cleveland's in the bottom 10 in the league in pressure rate. You have to have a healthy defense. They had two guys in the secondary out. You have to hope that the running game works great. The Chiefs' run defense as a whole isn't fantastic, but in their base and nickel packages, it's been pretty respectable throughout the year. I think that, man, it really comes down to the Browns having a lot of things fall in their favor. And we saw with the Pittsburgh game, it wasn't ever close, but Pittsburgh was threatening to come back just a little bit with Big Ben at quarterback, and that's after spotting them 28 points. So I don't think it'll take a perfect game for the Browns to beat the Chiefs, but I think it's going to have to be pretty close.
Sure. I noted before we got into our playoff preview, one of the first things that I wrote down, I said, look, I'm looking at all these teams that made the playoffs. I thought there were five teams that had zero chance of making the Super Bowl. Four of those teams have already been eliminated. I thought there was no way that we were going to see Seattle with that pass defense in the Super Bowl, the Washington football team with their quarterback situation, Chicago with their lack of ability to put points on the board, and Pittsburgh with their inability to run the ball at all. There was one other team that didn't have one glaring issue, but I thought there's no way they're going to make the Super Bowl, and I hate to say it, but that was the Cleveland Browns. Looking at what they've been able to do this season, they've had a couple of bad losses. They're 23rd in the league in scoring defense. They're 25th in rushing defense. They're 23rd in passing offense. They just don't do enough things really well, I think, to go toe-to-toe with a team like Kansas City. And I'm going to make one more take here before I turn the mic over to Alex and get his thoughts here on this Browns-Chiefs matchup. There are a lot of people that have been describing this Kansas City Chiefs team as a sleeping giant. And they keep saying, well, you know, if the Chiefs decide that they want to wake up and play the type of caliber football we've seen them play in the past, they're going to be fine. I don't think this is a sleeping giant situation. This Kansas City Chiefs team is a well-constructed machine of death. And on Sunday, I think we're finally going to get to see it with all systems operational. I'm not convinced yet. Call me a conspiracy theorist. Call me whatever you want. I am not convinced that we've seen the Kansas City Chiefs playing up to 100% of what they know that they can do and actually going balls to the walls. And I think the second the playoffs kick off, especially against a Browns team they know they can take advantage of, I think we're finally going to see that. I am expecting a blowout win here from Kansas City. But Alex, I'll turn it over to you here. Do you think that the Browns, a team that you've had plenty of time to see in your division, has any prayer of taking down Kansas City in this game?
They'd have to be, I think, you know, Jordan talked about this. I think they have to be perfect they have to run the ball incredibly efficiently. Just let Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt sort of carry them offensively. Having Joel Bitonio back will be a big help up front. Stefanski on the sideline being back will also be a help. And if they can keep the ball away from Kansas City as best they can, if they can, like, you know, sustain some longer drives, and if they can keep the Chiefs offense off the field for more than half of this game, that's their best shot at it. Defensively, I think having Denzel Ward coming back will be, you know, that's obviously going to be a big storyline for this week. And, you know, they'll probably put him on Tyreek Hill. I think that will be a big deal for them. And I think they're getting a couple other defensive pieces back, but I think that this is a Kansas City offense that, when it's at its best, which I expect to see now that we're in the playoffs, I think can really steamroll them. And not to say that the Browns, you mentioned statistically the Browns haven't had a great defense. They have a lot of great defensive players, but I think where they're missing out is sort of in that sort of mid-level. And that's where, you know, slants over the middle, the Chiefs can hit that every single time. You know, Travis Kelce, I think, is a really bad matchup for the Browns. So I don't know. I don't want to say it'll give Cleveland no chance in this game, but it's they'd have to be like exceptionally perfect. Like they'd have to play the game of their lives. Well, Kansas City, I don't think Cleveland beats Kansas City at their best. Kansas City would have to continuously underperform in this game like we saw the last few weeks of the season, and I don't totally see that happening either.
Jordan, I think of the three of us, just because you are, again, as a Chiefs fan, I know it's easy to be skeptical about your team in any playoff game, but I think you're expecting the closest game out of the three of us. So I'll turn this over to you here first. Any final thoughts you want to give here? And let's go ahead and get a score prediction here. Chiefs and Browns in the divisional round.
Yeah, I think that emotions are going to be riding high, and it's going to be an interesting game. But with that said, I am finally going to unleash the confidence in the Chiefs. I've been skeptical of them. I've been critical of them. I've been worried about them. I think that everything you guys said is true. I think that they are a sleeping giant, the machine of death. I think that Patrick Mahomes has been sitting around for a few weeks hearing that Josh Allen's better than him, hearing that the Chiefs aren't the best team in the league this year, hearing that they're inconsistent and overrated. And the Browns are just going to be victims of circumstance. I think that Kareem Hunt saying that the game's going to be personal means a lot more to him than it does to the Chiefs. The Chiefs are one of those teams that kind of goes about their business and goes home. They don't celebrate. They don't get into Twitter beef. They don't buy too much into those narratives. I'm going to go 38-24 Chiefs in a game that probably is 38-14 until the last quarter where Cleveland tries to come back, but it's going to be too little too late.
Woo! Okay, I was going to go to Alex for his score prediction, but I'm just going to go ahead and give mine. Jordan, you said 38-24, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so my prediction was as follows. It's all written down here. I can send it to you if you don't believe me. The Chiefs take a big lead. The Browns score late, but it doesn't matter. Chiefs 39, Browns 24. Only a one-point difference between those two predictions. Alex, I think...
Where did they get the 39?
Great minds think alike, Tyler, and then ours also do as well.
Fair enough. Alex, I'm going to turn it over to you. The Kansas City Chiefs get the win, but by how many points?
I feel like I need to give... I don't know if I need to give Cleveland any more credit, actually. I'm going to give the Chiefs a 35-20 victory over the Cleveland Browns.
All right, so none of us expecting that to be too close. All of us expecting the Chiefs to come out in a big win. I think that if Ravens and Bills is the most interesting game of the week, I think that Browns and Chiefs will be the least interesting game of the week. That being said, we've got one game left to talk about. Let's go ahead and get right into it. It is part three, Tom Brady versus Drew Brees on the History Channel. I'm kidding. I shouldn't be, but I'm kidding. This one, I don't know. It's going to kick off at 6:40 Eastern time. The Saints are currently favored in this one by 3. And look, a lot of people are talking about this game through the lens of, well, the Saints have been able to dominate the Tampa Bay Buccaneers twice this week. And then the other side of that argument is people are saying, yeah, but this is not the same Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that saw the Saints in week 1 or in week 8. I'm going to make a few cases here. This is the longest stint that I'm going to talk, and then I'll turn it over to you guys. But I do have a lot of thoughts on this game. I went back and watched a lot of film, looked through a lot of stats, took a look at a lot of things that happened in these matchups, and there were a few things that I saw that were kind of interesting. That week one game, I'm basically throwing out. Everyone's still trying to figure out who the Bucs are. The Bucs are still trying to figure out who the Bucs are. And here's how you can tell. Tom Brady in that first game, on like almost every play, was taking the snap, faking a handoff, and rolling out. That is not something that Tom Brady does. Like, I don't know why Bruce Arians thought that a 43-year-old quarterback was going to be great running play action. That was never going to work out for Tampa Bay. So the first game, they were still trying to find their offensive identity. A couple of Brady's picks were just kind of tip balls, you know, not necessarily his fault. The game that I am going to very much put some stock into is that game in week 8. You look at that game, the Saints got a 38-3 victory. They completely silenced the Tampa Bay offense. And there were two things that I noticed while I went back and watched this game. The first one was that the Bucs absolutely refused to stop playing zone defense. When you look at what Tampa's done this year defensively against the pass, they're 21st in the league. It's clearly one of the things that they do the worst when you look at this Tampa Bay team as an overall product. That's one of the things that Drew Brees has always been good at throughout the course of his career. Whether he has a laser for a cannon left or not, he is very good at picking apart zone defenses, and especially with the number of weapons at his disposal, he is always going to be able to find a way to get the ball to an open receiver. you have to match up man-to-man. That's what teams have done against the Saints that have found success against New Orleans this year, and Tampa just refused to do that. So whether or not we see them make that adjustment is one thing. The other thing that New Orleans did a great job of in that game is get pressure on the quarterback. They have five or six different guys on that defensive line that are starters on almost any team in the league this year, have been absolutely phenomenal, and there were times when they would just load up 4-on-5 and bull rush the heck out of Tom Brady. It forced him to make a lot of bad passes. It forced him to make a lot of short passes. And at the end of the day, they got three sacks on him and were able to limit him. No first downs for the Bucs in that game until after the first quarter. Now, again, people are saying, well, Tampa Bay is not the same team. They've figured it out. They've gotten it done. But let's take a look at the games that they've played in since then. They have faced off against the Panthers, Vikings, Falcons, Lions, and Falcons at the end of the year. None of those games really stand out to me. They don't impress me. They had the two losses to the Chiefs and the Rams. Kansas City and New Orleans lost to those teams. New Orleans and Tampa Bay both lost to Kansas City by 3 points. The Saints have a loss against the Eagles. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers a loss against the Rams. I do think this game is going to be very close, but I think the Saints can do just enough things well enough against Tampa Bay, and I think they match up well. I do think it's right to think that the Saints have the advantage here. Now, I want to turn this over to Alex here. Alex, you and I were talking about this a little bit as these games were going on in the wild card weekend. You may think the Bucs have the edge here. I definitely think it's going to be intriguing, but go ahead and make the case here for why Tampa, you know, what adjustments you think Tampa will be making here in this game.
Well, you mentioned that you don't find their last few wins impressive, and that's fine, but I think that the way that they won have been impressive. The offensive line has looked really good since that Saints game. Take it as you will. They haven't faced a pass rush like the Saints since then, but I think they've looked a lot better. And Ali Marpet, who's their left guard, did not play in that last Saints game, and he has been really awesome for them on the inside. So that could be, you know, a little area where they have a little bit of a better chance. And another one is the fact that Brady's getting the ball out a lot quicker. Since in weeks 1 through 9, I got the stat, he was throwing the ball after 2.4 seconds in the pocket. He was just seemingly holding on to the ball for too long. And then since, you know, ever since then, he's decreased that to 2.2. So he's getting the ball out quicker. He has better rapport with his wide receivers. His offensive line has been better. And then if you look at the other side defensively, you know, getting Devin White back this week is going to be big for the Buccaneers. And against the Saints, you mentioned it, there is a pretty decent blueprint for how to stop their offense, or at least stop their passing offense. It's when you have two-man drop and you play man-to-man defense, and that has really kind of messed with Breeze, who completion percentage-wise, it goes down a lot when you play that style of defense. So I think that the roadmap for Tampa Bay is right there in front of them to beat the Saints. I really, really didn't like what I saw out of the Saints last week. This weekend. So I don't know. I think that, you know, Tampa Bay is a really decent shot to put them away, and I just don't see this is a one-sided affair anymore. I think that this is going to be really down the middle.
Right. I don't think this is a one-sided affair at all. And as a matter of fact, I think that Tampa Bay is actually the better football team overall. I think that when you look at the things that New Orleans does well, I think it matches up perfectly against some of the things that Tampa Bay doesn't do well. Jordan, you've had a chance to kind of see, you know, the adjustments that Tampa Bay has made as they've continued to get better here towards the end of the season. Alex made another good point, too. Their wins weren't just over those bad teams. They were blowout wins over those bad teams. Do you think that the Bucs coming into this game, what do you think is their mentality coming into this game? They've lost to New Orleans twice, but they've got to be feeling better and they've gotten some pieces back. What are the keys here?
I think the key matchup for me is going to be Tampa Bay, who blitzes more than any other team in the NFC. You would have Baltimore on the AFC that has them edged out, versus the Saints that thrive on those short to intermediate passing routes. So you're going to have Michael Thomas, who is called Slant Thomas by people for a reason. He is that security blanket. You have Alvin Kamara, who is perhaps the best receiving threat at running back in the NFL, one of the best, if not. Tampa's going to be aggressive. I don't think they're going to change their strategy defensively for the Saints team. You mentioned how Brady was rolling out there. I think that there's still something missing with that Tampa Bay offense. I can't put my finger on it. I can't describe it, but I just have that gut feeling that although I think Tampa is probably going to win this game, I'm going to end up picking the Saints just because they have that narrative where they say it's hard to beat the same team twice in a season. It's even harder to beat the same team three times in a season, but I don't know. I just have a gut feeling that that matchup, blitzing and aggressiveness on Tampa Bay versus playing conservative for the Saints, is going to be the difference in this one.
Sure. And I also want to go back to a point that I made earlier. And again, I want to reiterate, I am by no means saying that I think that the Saints are going to waltz to a victory here. I think the Saints are understaffed here. I do think it'll be interesting to see whether Trey Hendrickson and Ronald Jones, those two guys, the health will be in question heading into this game. Alex, I want to come back to you here for just a minute. And again, I'm not trying to spend too much time on this game, but this is a Saints team that I do feel like I have the most experience with watching throughout the year, paying close attention to throughout the year as a fan. I just don't know that Tampa has really done, like Tampa, with the exception of that win over the Packers this season, I don't know that they've had another win where I sat back and went, damn, like this Bucs team is like, they horrify me. Like even when people were talking about them being like a legitimate Super Bowl contender, there was never a time where I really looked at this Bucs team and felt like they had everything clicking. And like Jordan said, it feels like there's still something missing. Maybe that's just another year of them all getting to know each other and how they play. But coming into this game, I still feel like the Saints' experience with each other and against Tampa Bay does give them a little bit of an edge here.
Absolutely. I think so, too. And we mentioned something missing, and I talked about this earlier. They left a lot of points on the board against Washington, too. And that's one of the better defenses that they've played this year. And, you know, down the stretch, they kind of found something in just, you know, beating the crap out of the teams they needed to beat up on. But, you know, and, you know, they kept it competitive with the Chiefs at the end of that game. I don't know. I think you're right in the sense that they're not totally battle-tested. At least they haven't been successful in their big tests. I mean, that Packers game was back in week 6, I want to say. So it has been a while, and I do think what we've seen out of them, like in the first half against that Lions team and in the first half against, or in that last game against the Falcons, is sort of what we want to see out of the Buccaneers offense. That's the version of them, that's sort of the peak version of them. It's just that they haven't done it against a good defense yet, but that's what it would look like. And now is their big test to do it actually against a good defense. They had the test last week. They kind of did it, but didn't quite live up to that potential. And this week they're going to have to if they're going to beat up a Saints team that has probably – we talked about, like, you know, the Ravens and the Rams have some of the best defenses in the league. The Saints are probably right there in the top five. So this is sort of, you know, that game where it's like if they lose, then what do they need to do to find that potential? And if they win, then – they just needed a season, and they kind of found it, and now they have a chance to make the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Again, to your point really quickly about the Saints defense, third in the league in scoring defense, fifth in pass defense, third in rush defense. The only other teams in the league that are top 10 in all three of those categories, the Bucs, Rams, and your Baltimore Ravens. Really quickly, Jordan, going to come back to you. Any final comments on this game? And let's go ahead and get a score prediction from you, sir.
I don't believe that New Orleans has enough to win in a shootout. I don't think Tampa Bay is going to win in a shootout, but both of these teams can nickel and dime you to death. That's kind of what they're predicated upon, and both have really good defenses. Like, I could see this one going either way, but I think the Saints have not momentum on their side, but I think that they are a better matchup against Tampa than Tampa is against them. So I'm going to go Saints 24 to the Buccaneers. I think I'm going to give them 20.
Jordan, I don't know how we keep doing this. I have Saints 24, Bucs 21. We did not pre-plan this. This was not, like, we did not compare show notes. We did nothing. We just hopped on the call and did it. You and I apparently on the same wavelength here. I've got the Saints 24, the Bucs 21. Really quickly, I do agree. I don't think either one of these teams is winning a shootout. And I think at the end of the day, I'm going to pick the Saints in this one. But I think the winner is going to be whichever team has the fewer turnovers. And that's what we've seen throughout the course of the season. Throughout this, if you look at the two quarterbacks throughout their matchups this year, Tom Brady, 45 for 72 against the Saints, 548 yards compared to just 382 for Drew Brees. But Brees has 6 touchdowns, no picks. Brady has 2 touchdowns and 5 picks in these games. And oh yeah, by the way, one guy who might actually be the X factor that the Bucs just haven't been able to figure out for some reason, it's Taysom Hill. He's had his two best games so far against Tampa. 3-for-3 passing for 87 yards, 10 carries for 67 yards, 2 catches for 35 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I don't understand why the Taysom Hill just baffles Tampa Bay, but they haven't been able to figure him out yet. Alex, let's go ahead and get a score prediction from you here, sir.
You sound like the Nickelodeon broadcast hyping up Taysom Hill. Like, he's the guy you pick. You know, they kind of described him as, you know, the guy always on the schoolyard. If you're playing kickball, if you're playing basketball, if you're playing baseball, whatever, you got to pick him first because he can do everything really well. You're harping on that. I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. I think that the Buccaneers have had, there is no excuse for them now this time. I think they've had plenty of opportunities to see what they didn't do well against the Saints. I think that they have really kind of found something more in themselves in these last 7 weeks of the season. I think it's a toss-up, and I think that I'm going to give Tampa Bay the win just for playing devil's advocate a little bit. 26-24, I think it's going to be really close.
Sure, and why not? I mean, you played devil's advocate last week with the Ravens, and it paid off. You're currently ahead of the two of us in picks, and I definitely think Tampa certainly equipped to win this game. Before I let you go, I'm going to come to you first on this, Jordan. We've got 8 teams. We've got 4 games left in the NFL season. Go ahead and just give me one thing out of any of these games, the one thing you're going to have the closest eye on heading into this divisional round.
I think for me, it's going to be the... man, you put me on the spot, so I was trying to speak slowly so I can stall a little bit. I think it's going to be how Kansas City responds in their first playoff game. I think that if they come out kind of slow and sluggish and lackadaisical like they have been in the regular season, then we can't call them the sleeping giant anymore. We can't call them the unanimous best team in the league. We can't call them the best team in the league possibly in general. But if they come out and prove us three right and kind of just beat down on the Browns, then I think we'll know that they were just preparing for a moment like this. So that in the AFC, and then I'm going to give a bonus one for the NFC.
Ooh.
I see how Green Bay does against the Rams defense, because they are my Super Bowl pick, but if they struggle, then I'm going to be a little uneasy. But then again, if they come out and play a good game, then I'm going to have no reservations about picking them to go forward to the Super Bowl.
All right. The one thing that I'm keeping the closest eye on is Josh Allen against that Ravens defense. Look, if he wins back-to-back playoff games against the Colts and the Ravens, I don't care what happens the following week, not if, but when probably they face off against Kansas City, I think that cements his place among the great quarterbacks in the league. So how well Josh Allen can perform against one of the best defenses in the league is something I am going to be having my eye on. Alex, for you, sir, 4 games, 8 teams, one thought heading into the divisional round.
Jordan taking 2 kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I was going to talk about the Green Bay Packers against the Los Angeles Rams. I mostly wanted to focus just on, even if the Rams lose this game because their offense isn't good enough, how the best defense in the league goes up against the best offense in the NFC. And I was excited to see that. So that's something I'm definitely keeping an eye on. If I have to pick another one, I guess I'll go with the Ravens with Lamar Jackson. He stepped up big time. Even when they were down, he was composed against the Titans last week. He was really fired up before the game started. And so now I'm curious how he continues that. We know we can win a playoff game now. Now is he a Super Bowl contending quarterback? If they could beat the Bills and go to the AFC Championship game, then at least he's a contender.
All right. Well, you heard it all here. Analysis, picks, recap of last week, of look forward to next week. We will be back the week after this to break down the 4 games that we just previewed for you and to get a look at some conference championship games. But Alex, Jordan, want to say thank you once again so much, guys. Thank you for coming on the show. Always good to have you guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tyler.
Always fun. I'm excited. This will be a good weekend.
All right. Of course, a lot of news going on in the NFL as well. Doug Peterson out as the head coach of the Eagles. Deshaun Watson, will he get traded? Where will his landing spot be? There are a lot of things like this that we don't typically break down on the show, and I wanted to go ahead and give a little forward promote here. Once the NFL playoffs are done, once the NBA becomes kind of the dominant thing going on in the world of sports, we're going to be doing a little bit more news in the world of sports, a few more updates, some analysis, some trivia, some bonus things that we haven't really had a chance to do since the big COVID restart. So looking forward to that. We'll have plenty of great stars on for that. Of course, Jordan Foote and Alex Weiner, who were on today, Koki Riley, Ethan Jordan. Plenty of loaded shows coming your way. Moving on, one last order of business before we let you go today. We do need to talk about the college football national championship game, the game that saw Alabama get yet another victory. Nick Saban collects another ring. a perfect 13-0 season, maybe one of the most dominant teams in college football we've seen. I know we said that about LSU last year, but this is a team that really came out and dominated a good 7-0 Ohio State Buckeye team. Here to help me talk about the national championship and all things college football, from Second Floor Sports, it's Matias Wildman. Matias, welcome back in. I know you had to travel very far to be here today in person, but we really appreciate you making the effort.
I haven't measured the steps yet from my room to yours, but I think it's got to be about 20, maybe.
Right, and then you got to think round trip, too. So that's like 20 here. That's 40 total if you're going to make it back. So,
yeah, I might have to put an expense report, honestly.
We wish you safe travels on your way back. Always good to have Matias on, becoming a friend of the show here. So 52-24, the final. This game looked competitive early on, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about just the game itself. I want to get into a conversation here about, you know, some things going on in college football. But, you know, we didn't really know what this Ohio State team was, and I think that's what made this game so intriguing coming in. That's what made Vegas confused. You look at the line that they put out on this game. But at the end of the day, Alabama, they just had too much talent, especially on that offensive side, and it really showed they were on another level than anyone else in college football this year.
Oh, absolutely. And you said it, but I want to reiterate, like, this was a very good Ohio State team, right? Like, they handily beat Clemson. Like, that was not a close game. Ohio State was the better team the whole time. And it ended up not mattering. You talked about how this was a close game at half, score-wise. The game kind of got away from the Buckeyes at the end of that first half. Even in that halftime, I mean, that game was over, right? We all knew that game was over. And it's sad because, you know, if Ohio State had forced a turnover and then scored one time, like, they're right back into that game. But something about it just... Alabama not blowing a lead, Alabama being ahead, and just the dominant team they had. You talked about LSU last year. Both are true. LSU last year was a great team, and this Alabama team, if they had a full schedule, might have been better.
Yeah, and I know that recency bias enters the conversation when you talk about things like this, but really, I do think those two teams might be the two best teams we've seen in college football. You look at the number of draft picks that this Alabama team is about to put into the NFL, and it goes top to bottom. I mean, they had the first wide receiver to win the Heisman Award in a very long time in Devonta Smith. 12 catches, 215 yards, 3 touchdowns, and I believe all of that was in the first half.
He didn't even play the second half.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he put up monstrous numbers. You have Najee Harris, who, of course, has been torching these teams all year long. Mac Jones, that entire defense. And again, I don't want to take anything away from what Ohio State was able to do, but I do think that, you know, it poses an interesting conversation for a lot of people, and we'll start to get into this here. You know, we've talked about the game a little bit, 52-24, really, you know, nothing more to break down analytically about this game. Bama was the better team, they came in, they got the win. What I want to get into here is a conversation about what this means for college football. So I remember I mentioned this earlier this week. This Alabama team beats third-ranked Ohio State 52-24 this year. They beat fourth-ranked Notre Dame 31-14. Fifth-ranked Texas A&M 52-24. Seventh-ranked Florida 52-46. And ninth-ranked Georgia 41-24. When you look at those wins, it makes it really hard to me to justify this conversation about expanding the playoff to an 8-team playoff. Because ultimately, the argument that people make is that there are more teams that get a chance at a national title. But do any of those teams, when you look at those scores, really have a chance at a national title if they're doing this to all of the top teams? Like, I still feel like unless you can put in something that brings the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world down a little bit, I just don't see any excuse to be expanding it at this point.
I don't know if it's ever going to happen. And I think people that want to expand college football playoffs to give other teams a chance to win, they're kind of lying to themselves. Because obviously it's going to give more teams a chance to win because there are more teams that are capable of winning it. But you read off those scores, right? There was no one in the top 10 that was going to beat Alabama. And the biggest winner from this is Notre Dame, who got, you know, shellacked the week before by Clemson, then lost pretty handily to Alabama. But then after Ohio State, you know, got destroyed by Alabama, they said, look, it wasn't just us. Everyone got destroyed by them. And you said it well before. This kind of makes the argument very difficult for having all of these teams in. I think they should expand it by a little bit, but I'm not sure that's really going to make that much of a difference. I saw this tweet about, you know, the NBA and college football just being the least, you know, exciting sports when it gets down to the end because they don't have that many different teams. And I actually went through every matchup, every team that has made the finals of the NBA, NFL, MLB, and NCAA since 2010 and since 2000. those numbers are right. I mean, the NBA has had 15 different teams in the finals since 2000, and it's the same amount for the NCAA since 2000. They've had the least amount from the NBA, NFL, and MLB since 2010. They've only had 8 different teams since then. I like college football. I like the playoffs they do. I think they should expand it by a little bit. I can't sit here and tell you that I know the number they should expand it to, but I also don't know how much of a difference realistically it'll make.
Sure. I think the interesting thing every single year, even in the preseason, you feel like you walk in and there are really two teams. And it doesn't matter. You know, it can be a combination of Alabama and Clemson, Alabama and Ohio State, Ohio State and LSU. It doesn't matter. There are usually two teams that can win a national championship. And I think that what's interesting is you get to the end of the year and that just reaffirms itself in some of these games. Because, and again, I didn't know this coming in, but I just went back and looked at it. Some of these games that we've had in these entry playoff games, they are not particularly close. I mean, you have the 54-48 double overtime win for Georgia over Oklahoma. That was a phenomenal game. Mm-hmm. But most of the rest of these games on this list are blowouts. These are not particularly close. We have been treated to a couple of close national championship games, but unfortunately, it just doesn't really seem like there's a lot of opportunity for those teams to make a big difference outside of that first playoff game. Now, that being said, I think the 4-team playoff is a very good thing, and Ohio State is the perfect reason why. If we were living in the BCS championship era, we would have seen Alabama play Clemson, who got blown out by Ohio State, who got blown out by Alabama. And that is the reason that I think that the 4-team playoff is a good thing. But again, when you look at expanding it, I heard an interesting idea posed by our other roommate, Jake Hermata, who said, why don't we give the Group of Five their own playoff? And honestly, I think that would be more interesting than what we see in the actual playoff now. I mean, we all knew that Alabama was going to blow out Notre Dame. But if you had a Group of Five playoff this year, here's what you would have had. Cincinnati would have been your one seed. You come down a little bit. Coastal Carolina would have been your two seed. You have BYU in the mix. And then Louisiana Lafayette, who again gave in a phenomenal bowl game. I think those games are a lot more fun to watch, certainly more competitive than what you have in the current college football playoff. But yeah, I just think that when you look at it, if you're trying to make the case that the playoff needs to be expanded to give more teams a shot, I don't think many teams really have a shot to take down those top two teams in any given year. And so I don't know. What do you kind of think about all of that? I know I threw a lot of stuff at you there. But it's just an interesting state that college football's in right now.
Well, I'll tell you, I love that idea, right? When we were talking about this with Jake, who also happens to be our roommate.
Of course.
he's a little further away than my room is. He's about 22, 23 steps away.
Of course.
Look, I'll tell you why they're not going to do that. Because it'll take away from the quote-unquote real playoffs. Because you'll have like this sort of NIT tournament, which is great, but how many people watch the NIT, right? And there'd probably be more people that watch this just because football draws better ratings and because people have been calling for this for a while. But the NCAA doesn't want to do that because if you look at the ratings from this year's playoffs, both semifinals games rated better than the championship game. That's a huge problem because if you look at the NBA, their ratings have been an issue for the last couple of years. You can, you know, blackouts in different cities and you have illegal streams and all this and all that. And I try not to put too much stock in that. But for something like football that, you know, everyone is watching, you usually have very solid ratings. This is a college season that almost didn't happen. And you're telling me that more people tuned in to each semifinal than the finals. That's a huge problem for the NCAA. So what do they do? I don't know. I don't think they should go away from the playoffs because this is better. And like you mentioned, if they just had the BCS, it would have been Clemson and Alabama. And I think what would have been worse than what we saw this year that ended in Alabama and Ohio State would have been if you just do Clemson and Alabama. Because it would have been nice to see, you know, Trevor Lawrence one last shot. But who cares? It's the same teams every year. And that makes it worse. The solution is not taking away teams. It's adding teams, but it's how do you make it, you know, how do you make it more competitive? Do you add an odd amount of teams that you give another team a first round bye almost?
I think that makes it worse. I mean, you really want to hand Alabama and Clemson a first round bye and then they're walking in rested to a game. It's just, I don't know how you fix it. I agree with you. It's really complicated.
And that other tournament does sound great. And we would I think a lot of people would watch and it probably would do well. But the problem is, you look at the rankings, and I'm not sure. You mentioned the teams that would have been in it this year. It would have been great. But who's to say it's going to be that good next year, right? And who's to say it won't turn into an NIT that, frankly, no one watches? I have never met someone that just watches the NIT. I think the only people that actually watch the NIT are people that are looking for draft prospects into the NBA and if your team is playing. And even then, if the NIT coincides with March Madness, if it just happens to overlap, I don't think you're watching the NIT, so it becomes tricky there too.
Yeah, I do think the one important distinction to point out between the NIT and what this would be is that with the NIT, you're talking about teams, 68 through 100 and whatever, yeah. Whereas here, you're still talking about top 25 teams.
Right, but it is just the concept of the others.
Yes, well, and I do think you make a good point, because if you go back and you look at what it would have been last year, I mean, you take a look at this 2019 rankings list, you have to go all the way down to the 17 spot to find that first team from the group of five. It would been Memphis.
And Memphis was fun last year.
Yeah, no, of course. It would have been Memphis, Boise State, App State, and Cincinnati. I think that what people would get more excited for are those undefeated teams, right? It's the UCFs of the world that want to go out and say, well, you know, we were the champions of something. But I also think that if you put them into a playoff like what we've been talking about, it also removes the chance for them to go out and beat 7th-ranked Auburn and be like, look, we really should have had a chance to be in this college football playoff over a Notre Dame or somebody like that who goes out and gets clapped by Bama. You mentioned also kind of the lack of parity in the NCAA. Nick Saban now has 7 championship rings since 2003. Absolutely insane, the dominance that Alabama has had. And you're right, it pretty much has been. It's been Alabama, it's been Clemson, and it's been the rest of the SEC. There are only 2 more things that I want to hit with you here. The first is this idea that a lot of people have that there's this SEC bias, and it's just not fair that people act like the SEC is so much better than... Guys, the SEC is so much better than every other conference in college football, and it's not even close. When you look at any consecutive rankings list of these teams going into the college football playoff, there are almost always a bunch of these teams from the SEC at the top, and it's because they're the best teams in football. And you see that in their bowl games. They typically go out and dominate their bowls. I'm tired of this narrative that an undefeated team in, say, the American Conference, even like a Cincinnati this year, is actually good enough to hang with one of the 3-4 best teams in the SEC. It's just not possible.
And it's a bummer because, like, record-wise, they should, but they just don't have that parity in terms of schedule. And that's when that whole, you know, expanding the playoff conversation comes in, because it's like, why shouldn't we get a chance if our record is that good? And, I mean, you can't look at it and say they're completely wrong. They should have a chance, but where does it stop, right? Because if you have 4 teams right now and you think about expanding it to 6 and then maybe giving like a first round bye or something, right? Then the number 7 team is going to be like, hey, we could have beaten them too, right? Or if you expand it to 8, then the number 9 team is like, hey, like we could have played them too, because it'll change year to year. Like number 9 team this year, right? It was Georgia. No one was thinking Georgia was going to beat Alabama or Clemson or anything like that, but... You know, if you look at years past, I don't know, maybe it was a little closer at 9. It just varies year to year, and that's the problem with not having an established playoffs, right? We forget that we're in, what, the 7th, 8th year?
I believe, yeah.
Of having the college. Like, it's very young. We've been doing it for less than a decade. As much as it's the new normal, it's not established. It's not tradition, so teams don't have... aren't as angry, right? If you look at the NBA, for example, 8 teams from each conference. The number 9 team looks at it and they're like, okay, maybe we would have been good enough, but it's not like 3 years ago we would have made it, right? Now the NBA is introducing the play-in game. It gets a little more dicey, but that at least gives somewhat of an opportunity to get into it. It's a tricky situation.
Well, I also don't necessarily hate the idea. And again, you get into the logistics of, well, do we hand these 3 teams a bye week? But I don't hate the idea of a play-in game to get into that 4th spot. Yeah, how fun would it have been? We have a game between Notre Dame and Texas A&M this year. Or if you want to look at it and say, well, you know what, A&M, you had your shot to beat this Bama team. You got blown out. We're not going to give you a chance to do that again. It would have been a game between Cincinnati and Notre Dame. And I really think in a game like that, Cincinnati could have played their way into the college football playoff. But again, anything that you do like that, it's going to make the road easier for that top team. And that's just not something you can afford to do when that team is already just going out and dominating in these national championship games.
That would have been fun. But, you know, it's people are always going to find a way to complain, right?
Yes.
Because if Cincinnati had gotten into the number 4 spot, or if A&M had gotten into the number 4 spot, and then they get blown out by, you know, Alabama. Yes, at least you can say that the better team got to play Alabama, but what's not to say that it really was the better team that got to play them.
Yeah. One last thing that I want to talk about here. This is something that I don't think there's really much of a debate here, with the exception of some crazed college football fans that just, you know, care more about winning than anything else. And this is something that I've thought for years, but I didn't have a podcast back then, so I'm going to complain about it now.
Okay.
Jalen Waddle. What is he doing on the football field? He had surgery, I believe, 11 weeks prior. And you could see, they showed him in warmups. And normally when they show a player recovering from an injury in warmups, you can tell based on the speed that they're running those routes whether or not they're really actually okay to play in this game. Jalen Waddle did not look okay in the pregame. They said he was only going to be running the routes that he was comfortable running, which in my opinion makes him so much less valuable even from a defensive standpoint. It's easier to cover him if you know that he's going to be limited to these three routes. He can't play off his right foot. He's not making a sharp cut and running a slant. It's not going to happen. Jalen Waddle, on the first play that he is in the game, comes up limping off to the sideline, and immediately you start seeing this outpour of support from NFL players, from fellow college players. Like, what is he doing on the field? I am still a firm believer that if you are not going to pay college athletes, they should not be selling their soul or their future careers potentially when they look at re-injuring something like that to be playing for you. And especially not in a game where you're up and you're feeling really good, you know, dominating this Ohio State team. So I wanted to get kind of just your opinion on this really quickly, because every year it seems like we see somebody play through an injury, or we hear the criticism and these people get all up, you know, oh, how could you withdraw from your bowl game? Like, yeah, this is a chance to play for your team. Well, guess what? Your team is not paying you to play in a game that's going to make the team and the coach millions of dollars when you look at the TV contracts and the advertising revenue. It's just insane to me what we expect these unpaid college athletes to put up with in some of these areas.
Yeah, it's like I just said, college fans are always going to find something to be upset about, right? Like, if it goes one way, it goes the other way. All I hope for Jalen Waddle is that someone sat him down and broke everything down for him, because at the end of the day, he's the one that decided to play, right? My name is Matthias Wallman. I went to a D3 school. I have never played football in my life. Who cares about my opinion? Not him, I can tell you that much, especially when he's making millions of dollars. And I completely understand the whole point of, dude, protect your future. And I understand, and that's why I don't get mad at people that, you know, opt out of bowl games, because yes, you made it that far, right? But also, you still have a whole game left. And if you know your future is secure there, you have to do what's best for you at the end of the day, because we see it year after year, not just in college, but in the professionals too. People bet on themselves, or they don't take the wise or safe decision and they get hurt and they miss out on millions of dollars. So you got to do what's best for you at that point. I understand if I'm Jalen Waddle, they kept repeating on the broadcast, this is a team that all they care about is winning, right? And I understand you missed most of the season. You have a chance to come back in the national championship. You're going to go to the NFL next year. You want to play. I get it. I completely get it. Beginning of the game, sure. Once you're up more than two touchdowns and your team doesn't need you, I don't understand being out there. But look, I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but at the end of the day, it's really just what's best for him. The only thing I do hope is that someone sat him down and said, all right, Jalen, if you get hurt in this, like, this is how much money you can miss. This is how much your draft stock can slide, all this and all that. I hope it was laid out to him and he honestly understood what he was, you know, risking by going out there. But hey, good for him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, good for him. He's a national champion now. He'll have that ring forever. And hopefully he can have a lucrative NFL career. I think he will. He's one of the good, he's a really solid receiver, whether he goes to the draft, when he does, who he goes to, all of that stuff. Phenomenal player, and he has a bright future ahead of him. Any final thoughts you want to give here before we go on anything college football, anything in the world of sports, anything at all? And then I want to give you a minute just to plug anything you have going on here, if you do have anything to plug.
I will say, if you're Alabama, you don't want to see the Ithaca College Bombers in the playoffs. I think that's why they're not expanding it. No, I don't have much to say. It was a fun college season. I'm glad they got to play it, because every week we kind of found ourselves just thinking, guys, what are we doing
here? Are we getting through this?
What are we doing here? Things to plug. Check out my podcast, Second Floor Sports, on Spotify, Google Pods, Apple Pods, wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, no, that's about it.
All right,
I don't have much going on.
No, you're
right
good.
Now.
You're good. Well, thank you so much for thank you so much for coming on.
Maybe next time I'll plug my target shifts or something.
Oh, of course. Hey, man, if you got it to plug. All right. Well, that will just about do it for us. That's all the time we have today. I want to say thank you once again for tuning in. And of course, as previously mentioned, if you missed it, we will be doing some different things going forward. Once we get through the NFL playoffs, going to be doing some more fun stuff with some of our previous guests as the NBA begins to kind of take over. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But I want to say once again, thank you for tuning in. This show does not happen without your support, whether you get it on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you tune in. We'll have another episode as we get into the conference round of the NFL playoffs next week here on the TBH Sports Podcast.